live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
Yes, indeed. It is Sunday and it's time for the Sunday sermon. It's a bit more of a, it's a bit of a different one this week. So I record these on a Sunday, hence me saying the Sunday sermon. You know, normally when you hear it, when it goes up on the podcast apps, etc., it's on within about half an hour of me finishing speaking, or should I say finishing editing. I record it in the morning, I edit it, and then I put it up. So it is Sunday, you listen to this, you know, I'm talking now on Sunday. Anyway, the reason that I'm saying that is you will recall me last week, or maybe the week before, saying that we'd received some bad news about a family member. The in perfect health, allegedly, went to the doctors and were told, no, you've got like weeks to live. Anyway, long story short, I've just took a call off my dad to say that that family member's passed away this morning, which is awfully sad, awfully sad. But, you know, such is life, as they say. So there's a few family things that I need to attend to. But that doesn't mean you don't get a show because, you know, if anything, I am a paranormal podcaster. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. So what we will do is I had an amazing chat with a lady called Stacey all the way in Washington through the week. And that's the episode you're going to hear now. That's the call that you're going to hear very shortly. Don't worry, she's got like three fantastic ghost stories therein, one including a tulpa, which is bloody terrifying. Yes. So yeah, but there won't be any additional stories or anything on this particular episode because I literally need to record this, upload it and then leave. So that's what I'm going to do. So yeah, sorry that it's a bit of a weird one. I do apologize. There is still a Patreon episode going up today because I recorded that yesterday. And if you want to go listen to that, you can go to patreon.com/ we need to talk about ghosts. If you've signed up, by the way, and you're expecting your name to be sung, forgive me if I'm not in a singer mood right now, but I promise you, hand on heart, that I will be singing your name out with gusto and enjoyment next week. So yeah, apologies for the amount of ums in this as well. Everything's a little bit spacey at the minute, as I'm sure you can appreciate. Okay, so, oh yeah, before I forget, I recorded an episode with the Ghost Story guys, Brennan and Paul Bestel, on, I think it was Wednesday of this week just gone. So that should be out on the Ghost Story Guys feed this coming week. We talked for ages. It was dead funny. We had a good laugh. So please go and check that out when it's out as well. Okay. I give you Stacey and her trio of terrifying tales. Okay, so it's that time of the week again where we get to speak to one of our amazing listeners, and I'm ever eternally grateful when we do this for them getting in touch. And we are speaking to someone all the way via the medium of the magical internet in Washington, and that is the wonderful Stacey. Hello, Stacey.
Hello, Kev. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, when you got in touch, you used a word I've never heard before, which was spoopy.
Right.
And can you give a breakdown of that word's meaning?
Yeah, it essentially means spooky, but if you're an idiot, so spoopy.
Amazing. I'm all for spoopy. We're going to start saying that. But when I did read your email, there was a plethora of stuff within there that I was like, we need to get you on the show. So obviously, there's stuff about graveyards. Mm-hmm. You said that there's stuff in your grandmother's house. There's stuff about an old neglected cemetery in San Diego. And there's tulpa stories involved as well. Much more, and I quote. So please, Stacey, wherever you want to start, take it away.
So I'll preface this by saying I don't feel like, you know, you get those people who are like, well, I'm very sensitive to the paranormal.
Yeah.
And that's not me. Okay. And I will say the people in my family, particularly the women, tend to be spooky. So I'm not the only family member that's had a lot of weird experiences like this. Like my mother has a pathological hatred of a Ouija board that supposedly goes back to her childhood when it told her the devil didn't lie. So mom's also a drama queen, so interpret that however you see fit. basically, we have a lot of haunted houses in our family. In fact, both of my grandmother's houses were haunted. The grandmother I lived with, however, is the one that I referenced. That was my dad's mother.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, we would go over and visit, and my grandmother had an older farmhouse. I mean, that's older by, you know, American standards. It's probably about 150 years old now. And my grandma was very house proud and she had a lot of antiques. And so her way of keeping us off of the second floor and smashing up the antiques, which is fair with, you know, several rambunctious grandchildren, was that she told us the ghost was sleeping and that we couldn't go upstairs because we'd wake her up. And she said her name was Letitia. And so we asked her, well, you know, who is Letitia? How do you know Letitia? Why is Letitia haunting your house? And my grandparents had a reproduction painting of Rembrandt's The Girl in the Half Door. And it's just a picture of a redheaded woman looking out the top of a, you know, the doors that would split. You could open the bottom and the the top and the bottom separately. And it's a fairly innocuous painting. But, you know, when you're 5 years old, it's just like, oh, yeah, all right. That makes perfect sense. So I moved in with my grandmother when I was 15 years old because my parents were living in the Deep South. And I discovered that as a fairly liberal, witchy kid, me in the Deep South, not so much. So my grandparents let me move in. And I immediately noticed that it was like, it was the three of us, but there was also a fourth person there, if you know what I mean. Like, kind of just like you could feel the... I don't know, like when you live in a house with somebody, you can feel when somebody's been in a room, or you can kind of sense where they are in the house, you know, like, oh, my sister's in the living room reading a book, you know, like that kind of thing. And it started to become more and more sort of difficult to pretend it wasn't happening. It started with, it was never malevolent or anything like that. Like Letitia was always fairly chill. But my, it started with, I would do my laundry and I was the only person at the time who slept upstairs. And because I was a lazy teenager, I would do my laundry, I would fold it. And then I would put it on the third stair on the riser going up the stairs to the second floor. And the reason why I would do that is because I usually waited until the absolute last minute to do my laundry because, again, lazy teenager. And so I'd have this huge pile of clothes. I wouldn't want to take them all the way up the stairs. And the third riser was right at hip level for me. So it was very easy to go over, you know, minimal effort on my part. And then next time I went upstairs, I would take the clothes up. Well, then I started thinking that I would put my laundry there and then I would go to run upstairs to grab something, go to grab my laundry. And it was on the second step or it was on the fourth step. And both of those, I either would have had to bend or reach to put them on. So it was unlikely that I would have put them there and not realized it, basically. So for a while, you're able to just be like, okay, well, I guess, I don't know, I spaced out, whatever. I moved it for some reason and I don't remember what it was. Then it started to feel like somebody was watching me when I knew for a fact that I was home alone, because typical high schooler, I would get home around 3:30. My grandparents wouldn't get home till 5:30 or 6. So I had the house to myself for a couple hours. And it would, I'd just be like laying on the couch watching TV or doing whatever the hell it was I was doing. And there would just be this very like intense, not necessarily aggressive, but intense sensation of somebody watching me, like to the point where it's raising all of the hair on the back of my neck. And I keep finding myself looking over my shoulder and I don't know why. Well, then it escalated beyond that too. So my grandparents, I think, very, very quickly regretted letting me move in because they had their life kind of set up the way it was. I was 15 and my favorite phrase to this day is whatever, I'll do what I want. And so they would have like traditions and stuff in place that I would, being a contrary little brat, would refuse to cooperate in. One of them was, my grandmother, for as long as I can remember, liked to do a big family breakfast on Sunday mornings, which would be fine, except she wanted to serve said breakfast at like 6:45 in the morning. Now, I'm a teenager. I can sleep for something like 17 hours a day if truly motivated. I can still go 12, 13 hours if properly motivated. And getting up at 6:45 to eat a 20,000 calorie breakfast was like, especially somebody who didn't even eat breakfast at that point in time, was just like, no, if I want to throw up, I can do that at a later time when I am feeling more awake.
I'll do that on my own time.
Exactly. And so my grandmother would be pissed because everybody would come over. My little cousins would come over. My aunt and my uncle would come over. And so they're having this big family breakfast and I'm the holdout that's refusing to drag her lumpy butt out of bed. So one morning I wake up very abruptly because I know that somebody has been standing in the doorway of my bedroom staring at me. And I jackknife over and I look at the door and the door is slowly swinging open, meaning somebody had just been there holding onto the doorknob and had run when I had rolled over. Now, I had much younger cousins. I had a, I think Elizabeth was 3 and Rebecca was 15 months or something like that. And so, of course, I'm the older cousin. They want to come in my room. They want to play with my stuff, you know, like every family dynamic ever. And so I figure it was the little cousins come upstairs. I'm pissed off. It's like 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I go to yell at them with all of the tact that a 15-year-old doesn't possess. I go look out in the hallway. Nobody's there. Look down the stairs. Nobody's there. And my grandparents' second story is, it's almost like a loft construction.
Yeah.
Where you go up the stairs and there's never really a definitive upstairs that's cut off from the bottom. There's a what's the word I'm looking for? A railing that goes around sort of the walkways that lead to the bedrooms. But there's no, you go through a doorway and you're on the second floor, basically. So like you can look over the, like, yeah, downstairs pretty quickly. So I'm looking downstairs. Nobody's there. I go downstairs ready to, you know, yell at my little cousins. I get downstairs. There's a million people in the house, but I can't find my cousins. And so the first person I see is my great aunt Linda, my grandmother's sister. And I said, hey, where are Rebecca and Elizabeth? They were just in my room. And Aunt Linda says, well, I don't think that they came. And I'm like, well, that can't be right. They were just upstairs in my room. Like, I know somebody was upstairs in my room. So I go, I, you know, ask my grandfather. He confirms my Aunt Jan and her kids didn't come that weekend. So it could not have been my cousins. So I'm like, all right, well, then who the hell was in my room? Like, mm-hmm. If it's an adult in my room, why did they run away when I woke up?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm asking various family members, none of whom would have any real reason to go in my room, but I'm just like, did you go in my room for some reason?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, no, why the hell would I? You're a stinky teenager. So finally I get to my grandmother and she is angrily putting away breakfast food, which was kind of our, like, that was our norm for Sunday by that point in time.
Yeah.
And so she's slapping, you know, leftover, I don't know, like quiche or whatever the hell it was into Tupperware. And I go up to her and I say, Grandma, did you just go in my room? And she goes, no. And I don't appreciate you treating my house that way. And I'm like, sleeping in your house? And she's like, no, we all heard you. And I'm like, heard me do what? And apparently, so because the house was old, it was one of those, well, I mean, it still is. It's not like the house is gone. It's one of those houses where it's like, if somebody's upstairs, like you can hear them as they walk, like, you know, what room they're in. You don't just know that they're upstairs. You can hear every footstep and where they're going because there's no insulation in this house. And so they had all heard me apparently get up, go out of my bedroom, walk down to, so I slept in what was called the pink room because barf, and then walked down to the blue room, which was the next room down. And then supposedly haul ass down the little walkway, run into my room and jump on my bed. And then they heard me do it 3 more times.
Yeah.
But the thing, like, they heard the bed springs, everything. But the problem with that is A, I was not out of breath when I woke up. B, I'm an asthmatic. So I for sure would have been out of breath if I had somehow done this in sleep. 3, my heart rate was not raised in any way, shape or form. And I still had that, like, shaky, you know, like when you're deeply asleep and somebody pulls you out of it, like you've got the like twitchy.
Yeah.
And so whatever the hell they heard, it was not me. Wow. And I, the only thing I can think is that Letitia wanted me to get up and go downstairs and join the family.
Right. So she was hoping maybe by if she done that activity, she was hoping that maybe like your nan or your granddad or whoever would shout to get you up out of bed, as in to say, stop making that noise.
Yeah. Or just maybe like, yeah, like they'd come up and yell at me and then that didn't work. And so she stared at me until I woke up and went downstairs to yell at my cousins.
Wow. That's amazing. So the name Letitia. And is there anything on that? Because that's not a name, you know, like if I'd imagine if my nan made up the name of a ghost, she'd be like, oh, it's Betty. It wouldn't be a something as like exotic as
right. Letitia. No, I have no idea. And the funny thing is so I have always believed in Letitia, partly because I was very young when I the concept of Letitia, but then I had these experiences. But the funny part is I talked to my grandmother about it after I moved in with her. And I said, how long has Letitia been here? And she basically looked at me like I was covered in lizards and said, this house isn't haunted. I made that up to keep you guys from going upstairs. So she didn't even believe in the entity that she named. That was the funny part.
Wow. So, oh, I see where we're getting to now. So we think that this is the point where you may have created a tulpa.
No. That's an entirely different thing. No, Letitia is real.
What?
I'm not the only person.
Oh, my God. All right. Letitia. Okay.
No, my kid brother had experiences with Letitia. Everybody had experiences with Letitia. Like, you feel somebody staring at you and there's nobody there. So Letitia was an actual ghost. My grandmother just apparently didn't believe in her. And so we just all thought it was really funny that my grandmother named the ghost she didn't believe in.
Right. I see what you mean. Right. That makes sense.
I think it's somebody who had already always been there, because like I said, by American standards, this is a really old house. Mm. And my grandparents had lived there since the 50s. And so, you know, like a lot, and even just in the course of their tenure of owning this house, there'd been a whole lot of change around it, because when they bought it, they lived way the hell out in the Tules. But by the time I lived there, they were right smack dab in the middle of Arcata, which is a little college town.
Right.
And so a lot of like upgrowth around them, changes to the land, that kind of stuff. And so my thinking is Letitia has always been there. My grandmother just gave her a name.
Okay. And do you think that at any point, although your grandmother didn't seem to acknowledge it or admit that she existed, do you think that secretly to herself, she did know something was there, and that's why she gave it like a female name and attached it to the painting, maybe?
It's possible. I mean, it was definitely a female energy, I would say. Like, it's a female energy. It's really hard to say, because my grandmother was one of those people where she was right, even if she was wrong. You know what I mean? Mm. So maybe on a subconscious level, she believed it, but she would never have admitted it to herself.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Really is. Mm-hmm. But as you say, 150 years old. That, I mean, I know you say by American standard, that's old, but realistically, that's old anywhere, really. You know, 150 mm-hmm. years is at least enough to have like 3 or 4 generations, isn't it? Really.
And they were born there, raised their own generation. My cousin Michael lived there when he was born. I lived there. And so it's like, so our generation, like there's probably, I think we're on probably generation 4 just for us who've gone in and out of the house, not, and who the hell knows what happened with whomever had it previously.
That is fantastic. I love that story. And I love the fact it's the sort of the wisdom of grandparents where they will attach it to something like a story behind it, at least to say, you know, and by the way, it's the lady in the painting sort of thing. I really like that. That's very cool. So what's the story behind the cemetery in San Diego? Or San Diego?
San Diego. Yes, it's San Diego. It does not mean a whale's vagina, despite what Will Ferrell claimed in Anchorman. So my best friend, one of my best friends, lives in San Diego. And it was one of those things, we actually met on the internet. We've been best friends for, 20 years now. Sorry, there's one of my cussing adjectives. And so I go visit her almost every year, usually in like October, November, because it is so god rotten hot down there that I do not understand how anybody chooses to live in that accursed climate. The funny part is too, is I was born in San Diego. So I actually have like a weird sort of double tie to the area.
Okay.
Oh yeah. My dad was in the Navy. So, interestingly, and of nothing, my older sister went to school with Mark Hamill's younger brother. So someday when I finally stock that mission, I'm gonna be like, hey, my brother knew, or your brother knew my sister, so let's make out. Anyway, so I go visit Cindy every year in San Diego, and their old town is this very, like, I mean, it's super duper touristy, but it's touristy for a reason. It's a really cool section. It's like the original section of San Diego that was settled. And there's a haunted house that's really famous in Old Town called the Whaley House. If you've ever watched any kind of haunted building in the US, the Whaley House is in it.
Yeah.
And so
I'm pretty sure I've seen the Whaley House on like every like paranormal YouTube group seems to have been to the Whaley House.
Oh yeah. And we actually did a just not the because they do like spooky tours now, but we just took the basic tour and we actually got a super freaky photo that we didn't even realize we had gotten until days, maybe even months after we had taken the photo. So the cemetery in question is, I think it's El Campo Los Santos or Los Santos El Campo. I can't remember the arrangement. And it's probably the original cemetery in Old Town. It's not too far from the Whaley House, actually. In fact, the guy who is supposed to haunt the Whaley House, Yankee Jim, is actually buried there. I've seen his tombstone. So the cemetery, the first time Cindy took me to it, was so poorly maintained that it was criminal, basically. It had originally been a very, very large cemetery. In fact, now, if you go to Old Town, there are these little gold coins that are set into the road and the sidewalk that basically designate a gravesite. because over the years, through sort of illegal land management, essentially chunks of the graveyard were sold out, are sold off, and the bodies weren't moved.
Oh my God.
This is some poltergeist crap right here. Yeah. So the all of Old Town would be just like heinously haunted. And I mean, honestly, if I was buried and then suddenly cars were parking on top of me, I'd haunt the shit out of the area too.
Well, yeah.
So, so Cindy and I, we're like, we're both into like, you know, like spooky stuff, but it's like, it's pretty half-assed. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, let's get our EMF detectors. It's more like, well, we watched Ghostbusters for the 9,000th time. So let's go see if we can poke somebody dead and get them to poke back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly me, except I've just got a podcast.
Right. Well, you know, we have a podcast too, but your podcast is a thing called Successful and our podcast is a thing called Low Rent and Full of Cussing. So,
well, we'll plug that at the end, but so you never know. So carry on.
Anyway, so we had gone to dinner in Old Town to this really awesome restaurant called Creole Cafe, which if you're ever in Old Town, two thumbs up, highly recommend. It's actually right behind the Whaley House. It's in one of the old Whaley House outbuildings, and it is also haunted. Anyway, so we had gone to dinner at the Creole Cafe, and Cindy goes, hey, you know, there's a historic cemetery. Do you want to go poke around and, you know, maybe we can take some photos? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like fun. And my friend Tanya had actually gone down to California with us. So it was the three of us, we wandered down to the cemetery, and I'm a history major. And I also almost went into becoming a mortician. So history and the dead are kind of interests of mine. So we go to the cemetery and it's terribly maintained. Nobody is in here taking care of it. They don't have a lot of like granite tombstones. It's more these blank white crosses, but they're made out of wood. And like at the time, probably half of them had rotten and fallen over. Like it was just, it was criminal how poorly maintained the cemetery was. And what made it further irritating is that there are, I don't even know how many like ghosts and graveyards tours in Old Town. They were all based out of the cemetery. But you could tell none of those tour groups were kicking anything back into the cemetery for it to be maintained. And I mean, there are graves there that go back to the 18th. Wow. Like some of the first founders, like the original Spanish monks when, you know, San Diego was just a mission, like they're buried there. And so it really is like sort of a criminal neglect of history, yeah, basically. And when we went in, there was a huge rosemary bush that was probably as tall as I am that was planted there. And I picked some. And I realized, you know, I mean, I asked permission first. I'm not going to go taking stuff out of a graveyard without permission. And I realized the reason why they planted it there is because rosemary is for remembrance. And it really pissed me off because nobody was remembering the cemetery. So we're in there, we're looking around. The first thing that happened was Cindy tried to take a picture of a tombstone that was towards the front of the cemetery because the front couple rows of the cemetery at the time were maintained. So if you just walked by, you'd be like, oh, what a pretty little cemetery. It wasn't until you got inside, got like three or four rows back and realized how poorly maintained this cemetery is. And the cemetery as it is now is not very big. My guess is it's maybe 30 feet by 30 feet, maybe. Wow. And something that I think originally was probably four or five times the size of that. So we're in there, we're looking around. Cindy goes to take a picture of this tombstone just because the setup was really pretty. And she walks forward, she goes to take a picture, and her digital camera turns itself off.
Ooh.
Change the batteries. She's like, all right, well, you know, let's see if this is a spirit saying no thank you, or if this is just technical, you know, like tech failure. And so she took a couple steps away. She took a couple pictures of other gravestones. Camera came back on, operated, no problem. She went to take a picture of that gravestone. Camera turned itself off again.
Wow. Well, if that's not a sign, I don't know what else is.
Right. So she's like, okay. She's like, I hear you. I get what you're saying. She says, I'm going to try one more time. And if you turn it off again, I will absolutely back off. No problem. She goes to take a picture the third time. The camera turns itself off again. She's like, all right, I get it. Steve, you don't want your photo taken. I apologize. I will absolutely leave you alone. The camera worked fine the rest of the time we were there.
And what was the grave? Was the grave like named anything? Was it anything like relevant or was it just a random grave?
It was just a random grave. It was one of the children's graves, if I'm remembering correctly. There's a couple of children's graves at the forefront of the cemetery, but I can't remember the name of which one it is. And so so Cindy's like, okay, you know, message received, got it. And so, you know, we continue to kind of poke around. And by this point in time, we've all sort of split up because, again, the cemetery's tiny. We can all see each other. And Cindy's husband, Max, by this point in time, he had been at the cemetery or at the Creole Cafe as well. And he had been chatting with a friend and had joined us after. And Max is crazy open to all of this stuff. And he hates it. And he doesn't want anything to do with it because his mother was super duper irresponsible with all kinds of like astral projecting, Ouija boards, like anything that you can think of from a bad horror movie that opened a portal. And so because Max was exposed to so much freaky stuff as a kid, he doesn't want anything to do with it now, which I 100% can respect.
Yeah.
So he came down to the cemetery with us just to kind of keep an eye on us and probably make sure we didn't do something stupid. And so we all ended up drifting to the last row before the cemetery terminates in, it's an alleyway now. So there's a little fence. And then on the other side, it's just a basic dirty alleyway. And there was one grave. I don't know why, just this one in particular, it was identical to all of the others. It was just the blank white cross. I kept finding myself drifting towards it. And I was standing there and this little grave was being absolutely consumed by wild roses. Nobody gave a shit about this grave. Nobody gave a shit about the person who was buried there. Nobody gave a shit about the history of this place. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I went from completely calm to ugly crying in like the blink of like just this full, like just the kind of like it was heartbreak, but it was like the dismal acceptance that this heartbreak is where you're going to be forever. You know what I mean? Like it was yeah. So hopeless. And I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And I said, and I don't know why I said, rosemary is for remembrance and nobody remembers this place. And I pulled that chunk of rosemary out of my pocket. I pulled a sprig off and I put it on the left flange of the cross. And I said, I will remember you. And just like that, stopped crying. The desolate emotion stopped. And suddenly the graveyard was peaceful again.
Wow, that is really freaky.
I've never had, it was freaky, but at the same time, I honestly feel sort of honored that somebody reached out and I felt like I was able to help them, if that makes any sense.
It does. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, especially as you're saying I completely agree with what you've said there, everything you've said there in terms of, I feel like when I see anything historic, really, you know, if I see like a building around here, in one particular part of Liverpool city centre, there's a street full of old, kind of like old merchants' mansions. And they're absolutely the most beautiful, like kind of Edwardian buildings you'll ever see. But they've been, over time, they've been bought by developers and converted into flats. And then they've had bad tenants. And there's like couches in the front, you know, just like set on fire and stuff. But it's gorgeous.
Right. That sort of decay of elegance, essentially.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. And so with this cemetery, and so what Max said was that, So the vibe I got, because by this point in time, when I started crying, Cindy and Tanya had both drifted over as well. And then Max had joined us, but was kind of stepped back and watching the whole scene sort of play out. And so the impression I got, and I later consulted with Cindy and Tanya both. And the thing is Cindy and Tanya don't pick up on this kind of energy the same way that I do. Tanya's only ever had one creepy experience in her life. And that was at a weird spa that she stayed at, but like she's my age. So to only have one creepy experience is a little unusual. And Cindy says she's spiritual Teflon and ghosts just slide right off of her. Nice. So I talked to them and the consensus we all got was that it was a female. She was young. She had died in childbirth and the baby had died with her was the vibe I got. I've never been able to confirm this because again, there are no names on any of these gravestones.
Yeah.
My understanding, like what I took from it emotionally is that they're buried there together. And she was heartbroken because she had been so young when she had died and she had been so quickly forgotten, basically, was sort of the vibe that I got. And Max said essentially that by me promising to remember her, we laid the ghost.
Wow.
Basically. Yeah. And the cool thing that has, I mean, it didn't come from this. This is coincidental, but San Diego has actually taken responsibility for that cemetery now, and it is properly maintained now. And the thing that's super cool is that Old Town does an amazing Dia de los Muertos celebration. decorations. They've got like I forget their names, the skeleton ladies. They've got them up everywhere. Yeah. Like it's beautiful, the decorations and stuff that they do down there. And they actually turn that cemetery into a huge public shrine. And so every has a candle on it, and you can do a thing where they have like popsicle sticks, and you can write the names of your past loved one and put them on the shrine and stuff like that. And so I think it's really helped a lot with the peace of that place, because when I go there now, it just feels like a peaceful cemetery. It doesn't have that sort of aching, we've been forgotten feeling anymore.
Yeah.
And every year we go and we visit our friend and we put flowers on our grave. So
what a beautiful story. That's absolutely beautiful. And it's really nice that you do that, if you do it each and every year as well, and go down. And because it's strange that you got that absolute connection with that person. You know, if you're able to, I mean, I understand completely why. When I say I understand completely why, what I mean is I've experienced similar, and I know people have experienced similar, but it's interesting that you can be as specific as to say, I got the impression it was a mother and child, you know, as opposed to, and that's the sort of thing that gives it a bit of authenticity to me, because a lot of people, if you weren't making it up, for want of a better phrase, you know, a lot of people would just say, oh, it's the spirit of X. You know, you have to be really emotionally invested and to genuinely feel like you're feeling something to say it's a mother and child, you know, to say there's two people here sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it was on my part or if she was just so desperate for somebody to listen that she was able to project that, because I've had other experiences, and usually when it happens, I can tell if it's male or female. Like I had there was a place I lived in for a short period of time that there was a toddler ghost in there, and I knew it was a little boy, and he would actually, if I was in my room or if I was in the bathroom, he would run back and forth from the kitchen into the living room. And I don't know if you've been around a lot of toddlers, but toddlers love to run.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of like patter, patter, patter. Like I'm just running back and forth because I'm a toddler and I like to run kind of energy. Yeah. And a couple of times would do it in the middle of the night, and I kind of poke my head out and be like, honey, we can't do this right now. I got to sleep. And he would stop. So, but usually I don't get such a clear, it's usually like, I can tell there's an energy here. Maybe I can tell the gender. But I honestly think she was just so desperate for a connection from somebody that she kind of blasted it out into the ether. Yeah. And I just happened to be
the recipient.
Yeah. And I think just maybe open enough at that point in time that I could pick it up. So yeah. I don't know. But Cindy and Tanya, who I, again, said that they don't have those kinds of feelings. Like they agreed that it felt like it was a young mother who died. So.
That's so interesting. For as you say, for two people who would normally say, I've got no idea what you're on about, to say, no, it definitely felt like what you just said.
Yeah, yeah. So that was definitely one of the strongest experiences I've ever had. And it was really interesting, too, because that cemetery was so poorly maintained. And, excuse me, while we were there, several, I think two or three different of the like touring groups actually came into the cemetery, and they were so disrespectful that I was seriously about to start screaming at them. One dude kept pretending to piss on the graves, and some of the actual individual grave sites have these really tall picket fences around them, like 6 feet. And another drunk idiot was like trying to climb over one of them. Like there was absolutely no respect whatsoever. And then they left. And then immediately after, we had that experience. So,
wow. So it could have been a mix of anger as well, maybe.
Yeah, probably. I mean, anger is definitely not an emotion that I have a hard time reaching for. So
fair play. Okay, so also on the email, I mean, I jumped the gun earlier. I assumed when we were talking about Letitia that we were going to go down the path of saying that she was indeed a tulpa, but this is a separate story then.
Yes. Okay, so the tulpa story, this is the closest I think I ever came to a psychotic break. So I work in mental health. I have a clearer understanding of what, I don't know, just like potential triggers and dissociation and stuff like that. Like I'm a little more familiar with the terms and stuff because I work with suicidal and psychotic teenagers. So
fair play. You well done, by the way.
So I was at the time, how old was I? 22, 23. And I had a raging anxiety disorder that I was not even aware of that I had, because this would have been like the late 90s. And so, you know, stuff like Prozac was only really just becoming like a common, like part of like the sort of common parlance, essentially. And I was also afraid, I knew I had depression, but I was afraid if I got help for it, that would impact my ability to get a job in the future, because I didn't understand HIPAA or things like that. And so I was living in an apartment that I couldn't afford because my roommate had bailed on me halfway through our lease. And I was so anxious and emotionally unstable that the idea of going out and finding another roommate was honestly beyond me. And so I was living in a situation where I could pay rent or I could pay my power bill. I couldn't do both. And honestly, if it hadn't been for my friend's dad, I don't know how I would have eaten. Honestly, he fed me every night. So I was living in this apartment. It was me and my cat Remington. And I started to become convinced that the crawl space in my closet, which just led up to like a storage unit, that there was somebody up there. And right. I knew it was paranoid. I knew it was irrational, but you know how it is where you're like, this is completely crazy and I don't believe it, but you absolutely believe it at the same time.
Yeah.
That kind of dichotomy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I was firmly there. And so it started to become more and more intense where I would come home from work or from being out. And the first thing that I would do is I would go and I would check the crawl space, because I had this absolute conviction that one day either I was going to come home and the crawl space. So it's exactly like, if you ever saw, what was it? Paranormal Activity. I think they did something with the crawl space. My crawl space looked exactly like that, where it was the frame and the ceiling. And then there was just like a panel that you could raise. And right. So this was well before Paranormal Activity, however, because I am old. So I would go home and I would check, and I would be convinced that one of these days I was going to go in and I was going to see that the panel was either slightly askew, as in like somebody had dropped it in place really quickly and hadn't realized it hadn't lined up the way it was, or I was going to go in. And this was the one that I particularly believed in, that I was going to go in and I was going to look up. And just as I looked up, I would see it slipping into place.
Yeah.
I don't lie. I was convinced that I'm going to come up with all of these like super duper, like almost like Rube Goldbergian plans on how I could put a lock on it without actually opening it. See, now where I am in my life now, I would just have busted up, looked inside, been like, there's nothing up here, stupid, knock it off. But at that point in time, I did not possess that kind of wherewithal. And so my goal in life was to never, ever see that panel open, whether by my hand or anybody else's. So I would find myself going home and I would check the panel. And then I'd get home and I'd start watching the panel. And finally, I realized I had lost something like 3 hours standing there staring at this panel. I didn't even realize it until after I looked around. I realized the sun was down and my legs hurt because I'd been standing there with my knees locked. How I didn't pass out is anybody's guess. Yeah. So at the time, my thought was, if I went up there, it was going to be it was a man, a very large man with long, wild hair and a long, wild beard. And he would be backed in the corner on all fours. And if I looked in there, he would attack me. That was like my conviction of what was it. The thing that wasn't up there, that's what it was. And so I knew I was being crazy. I knew it was paranoia. I knew that I was hovering dangerously close to a break with reality, because I could feel it shredding, basically. And everything ended up changing when a friend of mine moved from Oklahoma to Washington. And she took over my lease and I ended up moving in with another friend. And so suddenly I didn't have the responsibility of this apartment. I was actually, you know, going to be able to like afford to pay my bills and things like that. And I was relieved, but at the same time, I felt like there was a counting down in my head where if I didn't go up and look at it, it was going to come down and look at me. And either way, in my belief was that I couldn't make eye contact with it, because if I made eye contact with it, it would be real. And I would have made it real by making eye contact with it. So I start to move, get most of my stuff out. I think at this point in time, like all of my furniture had been moved. And we're just kind of at that point where it's like the bed needed to be moved. I think that was it for the large furniture. And then it was just like little tchotchkes, you know, like at the end of a move where it's like, you start out the movie like, oh, I'm going to make sure everything's organized and labeled. And then by the end of the movie, you're like, I could just light this all on fire. And I'm sure I could find all of this at a Goodwill when I move. And so it was just kind of that last little bit of, I don't know how to pack this. I don't know where to put this, like that kind of crap. And so I had plastic grocery bags all over the floor at the time because I had been wrapping my like little delicate, you know, trinkets and stuff like that in it, and then putting it in with my clothing. So I'm getting to that point where it's like, I'm about to leave, but I don't really want to leave because it's a change and I fear change. And I'm spending the night in the house and I'm thinking, well, I could probably sleep like two more nights here before, you know, the move is like permanent. And get into bed. Don't have my bedside light's been moved. So it's one of those have to turn off the overhead light, go to bed kind of thing. And I'm in bed. I'm super tired because I've been, you know, hauling stuff up and downstairs all day. And I fall asleep pretty quickly. And then I wake up out of a dead sleep. I don't even know how many hours later, but it's pitch black in my bedroom. And I realize I heard one of the grocery bags that was on my floor rustle. And so I laid there dead silent. Remington loved to sleep in grocery bags. He was a super, he loved it. He would fall inside of a grocery bag. And then if I picked him up and carried him around in the grocery bag, this was Cat Disneyland as far as he was concerned.
Right.
So just as that panic had started to hit that crescendo, that voice kind of cut in and said, it's the cat, stupid. And I was like, oh, right. Of course it's the cat. And so all of the anxiety deflated out of me and I relax and I start to slip back into sleep. And right before I fall asleep, I feel my cat roll over and he was sleeping behind my knees the whole time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. When I woke up, everything was normal. Like there was no seething brute standing over me or anything like that. But I do feel like it was him.
Oh my God.
I really think in my mental illness and my extreme stress, because I knew I was putting energy out because I could feel myself putting this energy out, that I really do feel like I think through or I created something. And I didn't even know what the hell a tulpa was until a couple of years ago when I think I was listening to the last podcast on the left and they did an episode about it. And I was like, shit, that was a tulpa, wasn't it?
Wow. I mean, and what a way to...
So yeah, so I think I created a tulpa.
What a way to describe it as well. I mean, the wild long hair and the wild beard, I mean, that was basically me about 3 weeks ago. But other than that, I can absolutely vision this, like, almost like, you know, like what you see a hermit in Monty Python films, you know, where they're wearing nothing, the beard's covering the private parts and the skin and bone.
And my instinct told me he was completely nonverbal.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This was something bestial shaped like in a humanoid form. So I don't know if maybe just my getting out took enough energy away that nothing came of it. I don't know. Like, again, this is one of those things where you're like, this is completely fucking crazy. And I don't believe this, but I 100% believe this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I really do feel like something got out and I don't know where he went.
And what about, you know, your friend who moved in, did they ever report anything after moving in?
Never had any issues. No. Lived there that long. She only lived for about 6 months because she just took over my lease, but no, she never had any issues. So, I mean, she was pretty, just pretty self-absorbed, all things considered. So okay. I really wouldn't be surprised if I find out years from now, somebody's like, yeah, there's the ghost of this like really nervous chick in the bedroom. And I'm going to be like, yeah, that was me. Sorry, guys.
Amazing. It's just so interesting. You use the language there. I'm always fascinated when I hear something which just adds a little amplifier to a story. And it's, I've just got a little shiver thinking of just the simple use of the phrase, and he's nonverbal. Mm-hmm. Just amplified the fear in me then.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
And he was definitely intelligent, like, but it was a completely inhuman intelligence, if that makes sense. It was the kind of intelligence a shark has.
Wow. Again, you've just done it again. Yeah. There were the You need to start writing all these things down. This is like a fear Bible.
Well, I'm working on a book, so.
There you go.
I mean, to be fair, in my book, it's mostly about aliens railing human women, but everybody's got their interests, right?
Well, yeah. Wow. Well, I think we're getting to our time, Stacey, but I sincerely want to thank you for coming on, and we must get you back on again. And obviously, you said earlier that you've got a podcast, so do you want to give a little plug to that?
For sure. So my podcast is called Creepy Kitsch, and Kitsch is spelled to look and rhyme with bitch, because Cindy and I thought we were funny.
Fair play.
And you know, what's the best way to get people to listen to your podcast, but to spell it in a way that nobody knows how it's spelled.
Exactly.
Basically, it started as just like horror movie reviews, because at the time there were no women podcasts that were doing horror movie reviews. We've been doing this for probably 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And we're super slow with our output. We are completely low rent. It's one of those things where even if nobody listened to us, we'd still do it because we think we're funny, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want like a 40-something perspective on the male gaze in horror movies, as well as, you know, whatever superhero we're currently leering over, you know, come on over. We'd be glad to have you.
Brilliant. There you go. Well, I'll tell you what you can do. If you want to, if you send us a link through on email to an episode, I'll put it in the show notes for this episode, so that people should just be able to click underneath on the show notes for this and go through and find it.
Awesome. We do a lot of, it's not just horror movies now. Now it's more like, we'll do just like general chatter episodes where we talk about, like, we did a whole episode about like stuff that unreasonably scares us. Like, I have an irrational fear of using public restrooms because I become convinced that like dirty bare feet are going to appear right underneath the stall door and I'm not going to be able to get out. So we just talked about,
you know, you're giving me pure nightmare feeling. Stop it.
Welcome.
Terrifying.
Yeah, so it's just a lot of, you know, it's essentially like the dark, the spoopy, if you will. And it's just kind of, you know, two friends bouncing ideas off of each other is basically the gist of it. We also do the weekly fuck off and the horror crush of the moment. So, you know, you have that to look forward to as well.
Well, you know, I can't wait to see what the weekly fuck off is, to be honest. That sounds like my favorite segment already.
If it's okay, can I give two shout outs just real quick?
Of course you can.
Okay, Cindy, I love you. P-chan, I love you. Ha ha, I told you I'd be on the show. And I also, every time you do the midway point and you say, I'll see you on the other side, Ray, I always respond, well, it's been a pleasure working with you, Dr. Venkman.
I love it. Well done. Well done. That's good to know. Well, Stacey, this has been an absolute education and some absolutely genuinely terrifying stuff there that I'm sincerely like that guy. See, the thing, whenever I discuss tulpas with someone, my biggest fear about discussing tulpas is that I then take away what they've said and I create that same version in my house. So thank you for that little gift.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, Stacey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. As I say, send that link over. And anyone listening, if you look in the show notes of this show, there'll be a link to one of Stacey's episodes, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Kev. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I'll speak to you soon, Stacey. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.